Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about opening our eyes to a new view of life. I'm glad you've joined us today. You know, each day we live, we have a series of choices of where to spend our time, what to think, and how to go about our day. And some people choose to fill the gaps in their day with worthwhile things like podcasts. This podcast is born from the firm belief that a powerful way to live a happier life is to open our eyes to new ways of seeing life. So hopefully today, in this time together, you'll get a new perspective of how to think and live better. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about belief. Recently, I was watching an interview with Matthew McConaughey. He had written a book of poems. He titled his book, Poems and Prayers. And Matthew said that he had written these poems over a period of years, some from his childhood. And the interviewer asked the question, why did you choose now at this time to publish your work? To this question, Matthew gave a very interesting answer that captured my attention. He said, because in our world today, belief is in short supply. Now, this caused me to think. First, I thought, is this true? Is belief in short supply? Next, I thought, what does he mean by belief? Is it belief in God, in ourselves, in each other, in our country? And last, if his statement is true, that belief in God and ourselves and each other and our respective country is in low supply, why is that? It very well may seem that we live in an age of disbelief. Ours is a generation that has more data, more communication, and more access to knowledge than any that came before it. Yet, it seems we have less trust, less hope, and less belief. Belief once served as the invisible architecture of civilization. It held families together, powered revolutions for freedom, and gave direction to everyday life. But today, cynicism is more fashionable. Doubt is the new sophistication, if you will. Social media scrolls are filled with irony and mockery and suspicion. When someone says they believe in something, whether it's faith, God, a cause, or a dream, they're often met with more than skepticism. They're met with an attempt to make belief or a dream unfashionable. This isn't simply a moral concern for us. It's a social one. You see, without belief, we lose the ability to move forward together. We stop striving for better because we no longer believe that better exists. The decline of belief is not an abstract philosophical idea. It very well could become a quiet crisis shaping our homes, our workplaces, and ourselves. Warren Buffett famously said, "Trust is like the air we breathe. When it's present, nobody really notices. When it's absent, everybody notices." In May of 2025, the Pew Research Center published a study called America's Trust in One Another. It shows that America's trust in one another has fallen from a high of 49% in 1984 to 34% last year. And if you look closer at the study, young people believe the least at 24% in each other, and the most educated among us believe the most at 52%. The study gives rise to the question that education and experience fosters belief, which I believe. And could it be that in the day of artificial experiences online, we lack trust because we haven't gotten to know each other? Well, in the study, interestingly, people who trust more are also those who are more likely to help their friends and neighbors. 82% of the high trusters in the survey say they would bring in mail or water plants for their neighbors. Non-trusters were much less likely to help other people. High trusters are also those who conserve water or electricity voluntarily. They bring meals to a sick neighbor or loan money to a friend in an emergency. Only 37% of non-trusters would do the same. Interestingly, trusters know their neighbors, non-trusters do not. The survey states that lack of trust is linked to our lower level of trust in our news organizations and lower level of trust in the national government. In the United States, the states with the highest levels of trust include North and South Dakota, Iowa, Utah, Vermont, and New Hampshire. States with the lowest level of trust include Nevada, Georgia, and Louisiana. The survey shows several correlating factors for declining trust. The share of Americans using the internet has risen from 52% in the year 2000 to 96% today. That is a correlating factor. The biggest reason the study cites as to why this erodes trust is the decline of face-to-face interaction, increasing isolation and more mental health issues. The second factor is 2 decades of rising partisan negativity in politics. The political polarization is linked to mistrust. The third factor is the inaccuracies in the news and information. This is a chronic problem in our world today. Who do you believe? The ethics in news reporting have eroded, and social media algorithms tend to promote sensational headlines regardless of their veracity. Last and important, the study shows a decline in religious participation. Christianity participation declined from 2007 to 2022, but it's reversed itself in the last 3 years, rising in noticeable fashion. Those reporting as having no religion grew from 16% in 2007 to 30% in 2022, but that has declined in recent years. Could it be that more people of late are seeking religious belief? Well, the data would say they are. But perhaps the deepest sign of disbelief is this: we doubt ourselves. The world tells us that self-confidence is power, yet comparison culture constantly undermines that. We question our talents, our potential, and even our worth. When belief in self fades, no amount of external motivation can replace it. Now, having said all of this, let's talk about how we build belief, because I don't believe that belief is lost. In 2013, Lathwack Primary, a small public school in Scotland, was ranked among the lowest performing schools in its district. Teacher turnover was high. Parent involvement was minimal. The standardized test scores had been in steady decline for years. Local press described the atmosphere as deflated. Both staff and students had lost belief. Then a new head teacher, Fiona Murray, was appointed, and instead of launching sweeping reforms or importing new programs, Fiona began by rebuilding belief in teachers, in students, and in the school's purpose. Her first action was to hold open forums where teachers could honestly share frustrations and hopes. Then she began recognizing small wins. Daily, teachers who tried new methods, students who showed effort, parents who participated. She called it building a climate of professional and personal trust. The school introduced visible learning practices based on Professor John Hattie's research, focusing on teachers seeing learning through the students' eyes and students seeing themselves as their teachers saw them. This effort of learning from each other, recognizing small wins, and seeing each other through other people's eyes had a remarkable effect. Within 3 years, literacy scores rose by 17%. Teacher turnover dropped from 30% to less than 5% in just 4 years. Attendance improved 9%. They learned from each other. And I find this simple principle incredibly interesting. Perhaps our lack of belief nowadays comes because we don't want to learn and listen. The more we listen and learn, the more we believe. Now, I've been trying to learn a second language of late. I already speak Japanese, but I've been trying to fulfill a lifetime desire to learn Spanish. And I find it incredibly interesting that I look at people of Hispanic descent differently, with more affinity now. I'm more interested in the news and the happenings of what's going on in Latin America. I've made new relationships at work and other places as a result of my studies, and it strengthened my belief in people. Could it be that in our day of easy information, that we've become less apt to learn deeply? Because it's in the deep learning that we build belief. Now, if you're leading a business, has the belief on your team or in your products or in you started to decline, it's easy to have happen on any team. Sometimes, especially when you have to overcome setbacks or failures, it's easy to let the lack of belief take over. And if this is you or your team, then you could take a lesson from Fiona Murray, the head teacher of the school in Scotland. Remember, she listened and learned. She put in place events where her team members could learn more. Learning increases belief. Then she celebrated small wins. She put up a data board where these wins were celebrated, helped teachers celebrate wins in the classroom. On your team, your job is to celebrate small wins. And the more you do, the more belief grows. Last, she helped people see through other people's eyes. As a leader, this is perhaps your most important job, to help people see how they may be seen through other people's eyes and help them realize how to improve and then how to see through their eyes so your leadership can improve. Perspective taking is a powerful tool. Now, there are probably many other tools that you can use to build belief. Sharing stories, encouraging, helping people feel valued. But the lesson is this. If you're leading a team, one of your primary jobs as a leader is to ensure you have belief building going on your team all the time. As a parent, one of our primary roles is to be a belief builder, listening, sharing perspective, and celebrating wins. You know, when I was a young father with 5 children at home, they were all between the ages of 3 and 15, I was working long hours trying to provide for my family. I was stressed, I was making poor decisions, and I was not being the kind of father I needed to be. The belief that I was building in my family was pretty low. Now, my parents were task-oriented, and so was I. And when I was stressed, I would focus on what my kids had done rather than on them as valued people. When I would come home from work, anxious myself, and the kids were in chaos or they hadn't done what they were asked to do, I wouldn't even say hello before I started getting after them. Usually, bikes were scattered in the yard, the garage had trash on the floor, and the house was a bit of a mess. And I would start barking to get these things cleaned up. As a result, I could see and feel the trust diminish. I struggled and genuinely believed that I couldn't change. Then I went to a 2-day seminar with my former professor, Dr. Stephen Covey. And here's what he taught me that day. He said, when he taught seminars, when the session was done, he usually had a line of people waiting to ask him questions. He said usually the questions were how to get someone else to change. He said he always responded with the same answer. If you'll go home and be a light, not a judge, trust and belief will grow. He said the way you do this is to focus exclusively on what you love about the other person and forget what you don't love about the other person. It was like a bolt of lightning shot through me. I believe that this way of being a father could work, so I started trying. I reminded myself to be a light and not a judge. I would think about what I loved about my kids. I'd do this when I would arrive at home, before I would walk in the house. So when I did walk in the house, at first the chaos was still chaos and the school bags were still scattered on the floor, but I stepped over those and focused on my children. I tried to be a light, positive and kind, and I tried to leave criticism behind. And here's what happened slowly. Belief increased. Love increased. And I kind of saw myself change. I believed in my kids more. I doubted less. And this belief on my belief window impacted how I acted, and how I acted had influence on my family. I had a huge amount of peace enter my life as well. Perhaps your challenges as a parent are different than mine, but the principle still applies. Learn all you can, try what you learn, and good things happen when you try. In the early 2000s, the Cleveland Clinic, one of the largest and most prestigious medical institutions in the U.S., faced an internal crisis. Despite excellent medical outcomes, its patient satisfaction scores were among the lowest in the nation. Surveys revealed that patients didn't feel cared for, listened to, or respected. Nurses and doctors were highly skilled, but patients described the culture as cold and unfeeling. In words of then Chief Executive Dr. Toby Cosgrove, we were world-class in medicine, but not in humanity. Belief, both parents' belief in the institution and employees' belief in the institution, was eroding. So in 2006, Cosgrove began a full-scale cultural transformation. Instead of focusing on new marketing or slogans, the clinic set out to rebuild belief through empathy, communication, and shared purpose. And here's what they did. They started to talk about how to make every person a caregiver. And they talked about the word caregiver, What did it mean? And how could they all, Cosgrove included, be a caregiver? This started a series of discussions to expand the opportunities to offer care to other team members and to those seeking treatment. They launched the Communicate with Heart program. Heart stood for Hear, Empathize, Apologize, Respond, and Thank. This initiative trained tens of thousands of staff members in these skills. And they made the survey metrics in the future available to the public. Here's what happened. Within 5 years, the Cleveland Clinic's patient satisfaction scores rose from the bottom nationally to the top 92nd percentile. Employee engagement surveys showed steady increases, and staff turnover declined by 12%. A Harvard Business Review report of this transformation, noting that the clinic's most meaningful achievement was rebuilding belief in compassion as central to care, noted that by 2020, Cleveland Clinic had become one of Fortune 100's best companies to work for. Now, for your team or your family, what if you started an initiative to build belief? What if your family started to be caregivers to each other? What if your team started to help each other in small ways to improve effectiveness? Would belief grow? I think so. And here's the thing. Belief has a great power to change and to do things that otherwise might be impossible. In the scripture, the Lord tells a father seeking help, everything is possible for one who believes. And I've seen this is true. At the foundation of this Open Your Eyes podcast is the concept of your belief window. Belief is a powerful tool and drives our life more than we realize. I've said before, imagine there's a bracket surgically attached to the back of your head. Connected to that bracket is a thick metal wire that extends up and over the top of your head and comes down in front of your eyes. There it secures a frame, and this frame holds a window. And through this window, you see the world. No matter where you turn, the window is always in front of your eyes, and it's your belief window. You can't actually see your belief window because it's invisible, but it's there. We all have one. And your belief window is always with you, shaping, coloring, and filtering what you see and sense each day. And each day, oceans of data and information pass through your window, helping you make sense of the world. And through that window, you interpret relationships and meaning and feelings and other things. For example, if you believe you're talking to a person who can help you, you will take on a different tone in your conversation. As a result of your belief and your approach, you're likely to garner more support from that person who views you as kind and eager. If you believe your child is smart in math, you're more likely to enroll them in a math summer camp. There, they learn more math, and they likely may pursue a math career. A person who believes that they can learn something, even if they don't know that thing today, is more likely to be able to do that thing. So, our belief window makes all the difference. But the tricky thing about your belief window is that over time, you've placed perceptions on your belief window that may not be true. Through your experiences and interpretation of social feedback, you've fashioned hundreds of perceptions. I'm smart or stupid. I'm beautiful or ugly. I'm creative or dull. Regardless of whether these perceptions are false, they are guiding your thinking. Because you believe them, you perceive it, you act accordingly. The danger is that erroneous perceptions on our belief window can cause great harm and confusion. Unless our belief window truly reflects reality, things as they are, not as we wish they were or think they are, we can fool ourselves and damage our chances for growth. Remember, if you like, you can take out your belief window and replace it with another. You can replace your view with a view that more aligns with whatever truth you value. And if you decide not to purposefully change your belief window, it's likely your brain will do it for you. And instead of you, your subconscious will take on the job of overseeing your view of the world. Belief windows are incredibly powerful. They've shaped history. They've toppled dictators. They've fostered families, destroyed societies, and built empires. And if we could understand how to create and sustain true beliefs on our belief window, imagine the power we could harness for good. You know, when Tyler Vigen was finishing law school a few years ago, he did something really fun. he went on the search for identical twins. Not twins as you and I think of them, but twins in terms of data sets. He looked for completely unrelated data sets that showed perfect correlation with other data sets. For example, he found perfect correlation between per capita cheese consumption and deaths by those who got tangled in their bedsheets. He found the same correlation between the number of new Nicolas Cage movies in a year and deaths by swimming pool drownings. Well, from Tyler's data, you would conclude the more Nick Cage movies that are released in a year, the more people who will drown themselves in swimming pools. But this conclusion doesn't reflect reality. The same goes for some of the absurd conclusions that we've placed on our belief window. They may seem correlated, but they're no closer to reality than Tyler's research. But we buy into them because we think there's a correlation. For example, you tried to start a new business, but the first 8 people you talked to showed little interest. So you conclude it doesn't work. But the truth is, it does work. But maybe you haven't talked to the right people in the right way or at the right time. And even more, the truth is, some people just say no in any business. Likewise, each minute of the day, our brain is interpreting data and trying to relate it to other data, trying to draw conclusions like Tyler's research. And sometimes our brains make connections that may not be real. Things that seem correlated aren't. Or our established patterns of thinking bring unrelated factors together and treat them as fact when they're not. What are the dangers of incorrect beliefs on our belief windows? Well, we don't attempt. We continue to be and do less than. We don't change. And sometimes we get used to living with less than. But I know this. You were not put here on this earth to be less than. You're not defined by where you've been, only by where you're going. You may have tried and failed. So what? From this point on, you can see with a new view. You are capable, strong enough, smart enough, and tough enough. Your beliefs can change, and that will enable you to change. And the minute you understand that you have a belief window and it's real, you'll start to challenge the beliefs you hold on that window. And that challenging can change your life. Now, one last thought about belief. Another scripture says, "Whoso believeth in God might with surety hope for a better world." I refer back to the Pew Research study, which has shown in recent years a greater belief by people. I have personally seen and experienced hundreds of people who, because they have belief in God, enjoy a better life. This belief infuses into their actions, perspective, and ways of seeing other people a divine approach that they would not have otherwise. I have seen forgiveness, caring, good choices, help, morality, and many other good things come about because people hold on to their belief in God. The simple belief that there is a life after this and the choices we make here in this life have a lasting impact cause people to make better choices. The simple belief that there is a God aware of us and that there is help for us beyond what we can do for ourselves causes some of us to place faith in God and to have hope when there seems to be none. Belief in God encourages us to treat each other with greater respect, to do good. It gives meaning to existence. It provides a moral foundation. Having raised 5 children, as I look back on any success that we may have had, almost every good thing I can point to that had a positive influence in their life, I trace back to the belief in God that existed in our home. You know, several years before he passed on, Billy Graham was asked to give a TED Talk at a technology conference. You can imagine how out of place I feel. I feel like a fish out of water. That's how Reverend Graham started his talk. He was almost 80 years old at the time. He said, "Have you ever thought about what a contradiction we are? On one hand, we can probe the deepest secrets of the universe and dramatically push back the frontiers of technology. But on the other hand, we can't get along with other people. We find ourselves in a paralyzing grip of self-destructive habits that we can't break. Racism, unbelief, injustice sweeps our world. How do we change man so that he doesn't lie and cheat, and our newspapers are not filled with stories of fraud? Then Graham got bold and he said, "You see, the Bible teaches that we're more than a body and a mind. We're a soul. There is something inside us that is beyond our understanding and yearns for God, something more than we find in technology." He told them about Pascal, who in the 17th century was called the architect of modern civilization, a brilliant mathematician, as close to a technologist as you could get in his day. He said Pascal was astounded that people could achieve extraordinary heights in science, the arts, and human enterprise, yet they're so full of anger and hypocrisy and self-hatred. As he grew older, Pascal refined his faith, and on November 23, 1654, Pascal wrote in his journal these words, "I submit myself absolutely to Jesus Christ, my Redeemer." Pascal would pen what is famously called Pascal's Wager, which says, "If you bet on God and you open yourself to his love, you lose nothing, even if you're wrong. But if instead you bet on there is no God, then you can lose all in this life and the life to come." So, as we end today, consider, is belief in short supply? Perhaps, but perhaps not. There can be belief in your life and mine. And when there is belief in your life and on your team, miracles can and do happen. I have seen them. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend and join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.